One of the most important rules that make improv possible is the idea of agreement. The notion that a very simple way to create a story, or humor, is to have characters accept everything that happens to them. As Keith Johnston, one of the founders of improv theater, writes, "If you'll stop reading for a moment and think of something you wouldn't want to happen to you or to someone you love, then you'll have thought of something worth staging or filming. We don't want to walk into a restaurant and be hit in the face by a custard pie, and we don't want to suddenly glimpse Granny's wheelchair racing towards the edge of a cliff. But we'll pay money to attend enactments of such events." In life, most of us are highly skilled at suppressing action. All the improvisation teacher has to do is to reverse this skill, and he creates very gifted improvisers. Bad improvisers block action, often with a high degree of skill. Good improvisers develop action. Here, for instance, is an improvised exchange between two actors in a class that Johnston was teaching. A. I'm having trouble with my leg. B. I'm afraid I'll have to amputate. A. You can't do that, doctor. B. Why not? A. Because I'm rather attached to it. B. Losing heart. Come on, man. A. I've got this growth on my arm, too, doctor. The two actors involved in this scene quickly became very frustrated. They couldn't keep the scene going. Actor A had made a joke, and a rather clever one. I'm rather attached to it. But the scene itself wasn't funny. So Johnston stopped them and pointed out the problem. Actor A had violated the rule of agreement. His partner had made a suggestion, and he had turned it down. He had said, "You can't do that, doctor." So the two started again, only this time with a renewed commitment to agreeing. A. Ugh. B. Whatever is it, man? A. It's my leg, doctor. B. This looks nasty. I shall have to amputate. A. It's the one you amputated last time, doctor. B. You mean you've got a pain in your wooden leg? A. Yes, doctor. B. You know what this means. A. Not woodworm, doctor. B. Yes. We'll have to remove it before it spreads to the rest of you. A's chair collapses. B. My God, it's spreading to the furniture. Here are the same two people, with the same level of skill, playing exactly the same roles, and beginning almost exactly the same way. However, in the first case, the scene comes to a premature end, and in the second case, the scene is full of possibility. By following a simple rule, A and B became funny. Good improvisers seem telepathic. Everything looks prearranged, Johnston writes. This is because they accept all offers made, which is something no normal person would do. Here's one more example from a workshop conducted by Del Close, another of the fathers of improv. One actor is playing a police officer, the other a robber he's chasing. Cop. Hey, I'm 50 years old and a little overweight. Can we stop and rest for a minute? Robber. You're not going to grab me if we rest? Cop. Promise. Just for a few seconds, on the count of three. One, two, three. Do you have to be particularly quick-witted or clever or light on your feet to play that scene? Not really. It's a perfectly straightforward conversation. The humor arises entirely out of how steadfastly the participants adhere to the rule that no suggestion can be denied. If you can create the right framework, all of a sudden, engaging in the kind of fluid, effortless, spur-the-moment dialogue that makes for good improv theater becomes a lot easier. This is what Paul Van Riper understood in Millennium Challenge. He didn't just put his team up on stage and hope and pray that funny dialogue popped into their heads. He created the conditions for successful spontaneity.